Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox, and on today's episode, my special guest is Mr. Brian Keller.
Hello, Robert.
Hey, Brian.
Great to be back on the show.
Thanks for coming on.
My
Brian,
pleasure.
Of course, is not only a friend of the show, but a friend of the show's host.
Yes.
And one of the premier talents here at Channel 9. My agent and Brian's agent met in a coffee shop. We worked out the details, and here you are.
Here we are to talk about updates.
Excellent.
To
updates.
Visual Studio. That's right.
Visual Studio Update 1.
That's right.
Which
yes.
Recently appeared on downloads, MSDN downloads. So you can go get it. For people who haven't heard about this, Update 1, is this just Service Pack 1 renamed? What's
you know,
up with the name?
It's interesting. In the past, of course, we would have had service packs for Visual Studio. As of right now, there's no plan to build a service pack for Visual Studio because we've actually moved to this different model of continuous delivery. So instead of needing to wait until the next major version of Visual Studio to get things like new features and new scenarios, we're actually going to be delivering regular updates to Visual Studio 2012. This is the first down payment on that and includes not only new features but also bug fixes and performance improvements as well. I should also mention that there's updates that can be applied to Team Foundation Server mm-hmm. as well. And when we talk about Visual Studio, we're really talking about updates to the entire family of products, including tools like Microsoft Test Manager.
Okay, so what you're saying is in the past, we'd ship, wait, big, long delay,
mm-hmm.
And then Service Pack 1 comes out.
Exactly.
Bunch of bug fixes, maybe some new features.
Occasional features, yeah, but not
kinda,
a lot
but
in the way
not
of
major
features.
Stuff.
That's right.
And then big, long wait, and then maybe an SP2, maybe, but...
Yeah, I don't think we've
not.
Ever done an SP2 on Visual
okay.
Studio as far as I'm aware. And it's not like we're just waiting around. I mean, we're building stuff.
Of course,
not,
of yeah. course. Yeah. Like building the next version.
Exactly.
But basically, there was the RTM version would ship, and then there would be a service pack to fix bugs, and then by that time, maybe the preview versions of the next release are coming. But basically, it was this very chunky delivery model. And now
exactly.
we've moved to this more... frequent cadence where we're going to do updates
right.
on a more timely basis and
right.
to distinguish the fact that they are regularly occurring and feature new and have new features in them in
right.
addition to the bug fixes. We're not going to call them service packs because that just implies we're fixing bugs. Is
right,
that
right.
kind
and,
of the deal?
And of course, we are fixing bugs, but there's a lot more in here. And so it's what the industry would refer to as a continuous delivery model for these updates.
Right. Cool. So that's update one. So we would expect... Have we announced the cadence?
I think we've said more or less quarterly, but
quarterly.
We haven't really
okay,
committed, you know, hard and fast. So we'll
right.
do the right thing based on customer feedback, as
yep.
we always do.
Okay,
yep.
sweet. So what's in update one?
I'm glad you asked. So I actually prepared a list because there's a lot of stuff in here that I wanted to cover. Obviously, lots of bug fixes and performance improvements that mm-hmm. That I'm not going to get into. But if we start at the top, one of the things that a lot of people asked us for was the ability for you to write C++ applications using Visual Studio 2012, which targeted Windows XP.
Yes.
Still a lot of organizations mm-hmm. out there using Windows XP, and so that's something that we've committed to delivering and is now available as part of Update 1.
Okay.
Of course, you can continue to write .NET Framework managed applications that target older versions of the .NET Framework, which run on Windows XP as well. But now this gives mm-hmm. kind of parity, if you will, to both the C++ and the managed development crowd there.
Right.
Another thing that we brought for people that are building these Windows Store applications
mm-hmm.
is the ability for you to debug mixed mode applications. So if you've got an application that's using some .NET code and some native code, you can now debug those.
Very nice.
You can also debug native dumps that are coming from ARM devices as well. So it's just really nice debugging support built right into Visual Studio 2012 Update 1.
That's very cool for people writing, say, graphics-intensive apps where a lot of the code's in C++, like maybe shopping apps where you're displaying a lot of books or movies
mm-hmm.
or something. I know that on many of those, the graphics engine, the engine that does the retrieving of the images and displaying of those is often done in C++ for
mm-hmm.
performance reasons, whereas maybe the UI and some of the logic code might be written in something else.
Exactly,
so
that's a great example.
Makes it easier to debug these because now you can step from your C# code into
mm-hmm.
the C++ code or your JavaScript code into the C++ code and back again. Right?
That's right. That's cool. Right. And also, I don't know if you've started building a Windows Phone 8 application now that the SDK is available, which is a great SDK.
Have.
One of the things that was added to Update 1 is code analysis support for Windows Phone 8 projects.
Cool.
So what that means is I can run a set of rules against my Windows Phone 8 projects that might point out things that I should be aware of, maybe some security best practices or naming patterns or that sort of thing.
Excellent.
So that's all built in. You can start taking advantage of that. Of course, you still need to have the Phone 8 SDK installed, but then you can start taking advantage of code analysis for those projects.
Right.
Now, have you ever done any SharePoint development in the past?
I have.
You have? All right, you'll appreciate the next batch of features. I promise we're going to get into some demos here in a minute, but this one is really targeted at SharePoint developers, and that is the ability for you to really do load testing, coded UI testing, unit testing. You know, when you try to test SharePoint applications, there's these GUIDs that get generated each time you start a new session. And so if you're going to, for example, try to build a coded UI test that starts to use a SharePoint site, and then you want to replay that back later on, by default, without Update 1, it would have been broken because of this new GUID for the session ID that gets generated. So now we've revamped all those testing tools to make sure that they continue to work when you're building SharePoint applications. And when you find bugs in those SharePoint applications, you can now take advantage of new IntelliTrace collectors that specifically target some of the lower-level SharePoint engine events. And so if you're using IntelliTrace with Visual Studio Ultimate and you've applied Update 1, you'll notice a new set of events specifically for SharePoint.
So two questions on that. Which versions of SharePoint are supported?
Right now it's SharePoint 2010.
10, okay.
That's right. Yep, and obviously we want to do better in the future with the newer versions of SharePoint.
SharePoint 2013 support will come in a future update, hopefully.
I don't have anything to announce right now. I don't want to speak for the team, but
that's
my understanding.
Okay,
yeah.
And then secondly, do you know offhand if you can do IntelliTrace in production on that SharePoint machine?
Yes, you can.
Cool.
So you can spin up the IntelliTrace PowerShell commandlets, and you can capture from SharePoint farms that are running out there in production.
So that's where you can run IntelliSense on the server without having to have
IntelliTrace.
Visual Studio.
IntelliTrace on the server without having to have. You said IntelliSense.
Oh.
That's all right. Without
IntelliTrace
having to,
on the server without having to have Visual Studio on it.
That's right. And so that's really nice for a production data farm where people aren't going to let you necessarily install Visual Studio on those machines, but you still need to troubleshoot when things go bump in the night.
Yep. So I had Larry Guger on a couple months ago to show that.
Yep.
That's very, very cool stuff. So you can run that on those SharePoint machines and then look at that in Visual Studio with Update 1.
Yeah, you sure can. You get those events right back.
Exactly.
Awesome. So,
man, I'm excited already.
We haven't even done a demo. So now, actually, let's jump right in and do a demo. If you take a look at what I have right now, this is actually a virtual machine that I built and shipped an Update 1 version of. And if you use Team Foundation Server 2012, then this looks familiar already. And one of the things that we added into the 2012 Update 1 is actually a new board over here called a Kanban board. Now, Kanban is something that we added actually a couple of months ago to the Team Foundation service, which of course is our version of Team Foundation server that runs on top of the Windows Azure platform.
For folks that may not be familiar with that, review what Kanban is.
Yeah, so Kanban.
It's Kanban, not Kanban?
I've heard it both ways,
okay.
But the idea basically is let's say it actually comes from Japanese engineering practices, and let's say that you are Toyota and you're building cars.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make a lot of sense for you to just have everybody at your company building tires for 3 months, and then you're going to be left with a stack full of tires and no cars to show for it. Obviously, the way you would build a car is you would have a few people building car parts, and then a few people assembling those parts, a few people testing them, and then a few people driving them off the lot.
Right.
And so Kanban basically takes those same principles and applies them to software development. And so if you look here, this is my backlog of work that I might be working on. When you first upgrade your Team Foundation server instance to Update 1, you'll notice this new board category over here. And this gives you a list of all the different states of work. So here you can see at the far right, I have work that's obviously done. But I also have some work over here, which is brand new. It might just be in the idea phase right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so by default, your work in progress limit limits are set to 10, but you might want to come in here and say, you know, at any given time, I want to have a maximum of 3 work items that are actually in progress and being worked on by the development team, and then maybe 3 over here that are currently kind of being researched and spec'd out. And so if I start to drag some of this work over here, it's updating in real time against Team Foundation server. Yep. And then if I watch what happens when I drag over a 4th item, it's now going to flag this for me and say, you know what, you've got too much work in the system. Likewise, if I was to take some of this work and move it over to the committed state, it would flag this for me as well. And basically what that says is we want to have this continuous flow of work. We don't want to have too little work in each stage, but equally as important is we don't want to have too much work, because obviously you're going to be asking your dev team or your business analyst team to context switch across all that work, and nobody's going to be able to focus on a really high quality product.
So when you had 0 in there, it doesn't flag not enough?
Well, that's up to you. I mean, it doesn't change red or anything like that. But yeah, the idea is that you could look at this now and you could just quickly understand what your work in progress looks like. Mm-hmm. And then notice you get this new graph up here. This is a cumulative flow diagram. I don't have a lot of data in here which highlights it, but over time, basically what you want to do is you want to have your data kind of, you know, flow out to the customer in this continuous flow. And really, we're doing the same practices within Microsoft when we think about building update 1 and update 2. We don't want to overwhelm the dev, test, or QA team by actually having too much work in any stage of the system. We want to make sure that we have, you know, nice bite-sized releases, if you will. Yeah.
Cool.
Other stuff that if you use Team Foundation Server and if you've applied Update 1 that you might start to notice is just some really nice, you know, fit and finish capabilities in here. So, for example, if I come into Sprint 3 and I take a look at my task board, which is a different type of board, the task board basically gives me a surface for understanding all of the tasks that I have currently assigned to individuals based on user story. So here you can see that, you know, Cameron has this work that's currently a child of this particular requirement or user story. One of the things that people asked us for is the ability to easily reparent this task. So now I can drag and drop this up to this user story and say, actually, it's not a child of that one, it's a child of this one, let's move it around. And likewise, if you move over to the team members pivot, I can do similar things with drag and drop here. So for example, let's say that I find out that Annie's out sick. I can take this work and I can drag it onto myself, and then that's going to just easily retarget. So there's a lot of stuff that is just fit and finish that we've learned from the Team Foundation service that's been online, and now we've taken that and made that available for people that are running Team Foundation server on premises if they apply Update 1.
Cool.
Yeah. So those are some of the my favorite features around what's new in Team Foundation Server. Let's now drop back into Visual Studio and show you a couple of the new things that you have with respect to testing from within Visual Studio. Now, you may have noticed over here, if you've started to do testing with Visual Studio 2012, we got rid of about a half dozen testing windows and consolidated everything into a single Test Explorer view.
Good.
And so that allows me to have a wide variety of tests. They can be everything from, you know, the classic MS test unit tests to in-unit, X-unit, coded UI tests, everything kind of lumped into one set of tests. That is a great way for me to easily click on Run All for all of my tests. But the challenge with this particular setup is that these tests may include unit tests, which are easy for me to run quickly, but they may also include UI tests, which are going to launch the browser every time I run that test. I don't necessarily want to do that every time I say run all my tests. And so the way we've addressed that is by adding what are called traits. And if I filter now by trait, you'll notice if I come into my UI test, I've actually added this tag manually called test category, and I've defined that as a UI test. I can really type whatever string I want there. I can call that, you know, Robert Green if I want to. And then when I rebuild my project, it's going to show me all the Robert Green tests, and maybe those are the tests that I want to run when I'm, you know, doing my daily check-ins or something like that.
So that test category attribute causes that to happen?
The test category attribute does for these types of tests. Now, keep in mind that the types of tests that we support now in Visual Studio 2012 are extensible. So third parties like InUnit and XUnit have already plugged in. So depending on the type of testing framework you're using, the actual tag might vary.
Okay.
So for Microsoft tests, it happens to be test category.
Right.
For other frameworks, it might be something else.
Okay.
It just depends on the type of provider they implement.
Cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One other thing that I want to show you is the ability for you to now run these tests using Firefox or Internet Explorer or Chrome. And so what you'll see here, of course, is that I've written some tests here. I wrote a simple test earlier. It's just a coded UI test. And I installed an add-on package, actually, from Selenium. If you've ever worked with Selenium, Selenium is a great open source framework that lets you write tests and run those against a variety of browsers, including Internet Explorer and Chrome and Firefox.
Okay.
And what we've done is we've actually layered coded UI tests in Update 1 on top of that, so that if you decide to, you can record those tests using Internet Explorer. And I'm not going to record a test just in the interest of time. There's other videos out there that show you how to do that. And then what you can do is you can choose to change the output of that particular test to Firefox or to Chrome, for example. And so here you can see I've got this test method 3. We'll just go ahead and run that. Just a really simple test, and it's going to launch Firefox. And the beauty of this, of course, is that you could have a scenario which works perfectly fine in Internet Explorer,
right,
but renders completely different in Firefox or vice versa. So now you can take advantage of this for being able to play those back in any of those browsers. So that
cool.
You can see it's launching Firefox and opening up Bing. Really simple test, but you get the idea.
Cool.
Finally, there's another new demo. I'm not going to show it because there's actually a great video when you launch the start page from within Update 1. So if I use Quick Launch for everything, as I'm sure you do now as
Absolutely.
Well. So when I launch the start page, if you go into the start page, you'll see a few videos that actually go through some of the capabilities we're talking about.
Uh-huh.
One of those is CodeMap. And CodeMap is a really great way to visualize the code that exists within your project and be able to build up these really nice diagrams that show you the relationship between one piece of code and a method
yep.
call and another piece of code, and just kind of dynamically build that out. So check out CodeMap. That one, of course, is available if you're using Visual Studio Ultimate
right.
Only.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So that's now in the product. There were, we did a video a while back on the sort of the precursor to that. Now it's actually a shipping part
yeah,
of the
product. Yeah, was it Code Bubbles,
yeah.
I think, was similar?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's great to see these you know other release vehicles like Power Tools
yeah.
and you know kind of NuGet packages that you can download starting to show up right alongside the kind of you know formal product, if you will.
Yeah, it's a very different world, you know, back in the day. Back when it was called the day,
yeah,
you know the product would release, and there really weren't updates.
No.
There were bug fixes, anything you want. There were you know third party add-ins and whatnot. But you know you release the product, and then you release the product, then you release the product, and now we're in a world where it's so different. There's all kinds of things you can plug in. I'm just waxing nostalgic here, of course.
Yes, exactly.
This is not news to anybody,
nope.
But it is cool. I mean, even stuff. To get to the main point, even stuff that we do, you know, as sort of a research project or, you know, somebody builds an extension because they're playing around, and next thing you know, it's either a fully supported extension that works in the product or eventually makes it into the product.
Exactly.
And now we're taking that kind of a step further to circle back to what was originally my point.
Yeah.
With the updates, you know, this... quarterly or so release cadence. So.
Right, and another great example of that is the productivity power tools.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the productivity power tools that shipped with 2010,
yeah.
Or
big
shipped
chunk of those.
On top of 2010,
right. Big chunk of those
a lot
made
of those...
it into the product.
Absolutely.
And again, that was actually last week's episode with Murali, and he made the point that to determine what features from the power tools made it into the product, they used user voice very heavily. So
yeah.
Do you know if the things that we decided would go into the update were based on feedback through user voice?
A lot of them are,
okay.
yes. Not everything comes in through the user voice channel,
right.
But we definitely do pay attention to that one, and I see the update mails that get around, sent around saying, you know, hey, we've got this particular user voice issue. It's the top of the charts for
right.
this week. What are we doing about it? And for the ones that we're able to fix, we track that really closely, and so, yes, if
yeah.
you have feedback, go to, what is it, visualstudio.uservoice.com.
Exactly. Yep. Cool. All right.
Great.
So that's update one.
And hopefully we'll be back in a few months to talk about
update
two.
Go get it. It is free of charge.
It is.
Freely downloadable. And a lot of bug... Well, I don't know how many bug fixes. I'll say a lot.
But at least two.
At least two. I have no idea what the number is, and I don't mean to imply that there were tons of bugs. It contains bug fixes and the new features you just saw. Thanks. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
All right. See you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.